welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We're always interested in your thoughts. Drop us a note to indianaweekend@gmail.com with your suggestions and comments. Let us know what's going on where you are. Muncie and Ball State University are remembering a dear friend this week. Al Wren, longtime face of the university as its Director of Community Relations, and more recently Executive Director and General Manager of Indiana Public Radio and WIPB Television, passed away on Tuesday, January 17th, after a long illness. Al was so well known and so well liked, appearing everywhere, volunteering, called Mr. Muncie by many people, and named Person of the Year by the Star Press. He had a great spirit, a self-deprecating sense of humor. He and David Letterman were at Ball State at the same time, and when Letterman retired in 2015, Al reminisced about those days. Letterman got his start on WBST, where Indiana Public Radio originates. As we learned in this interview from 2015, his first boss was fellow student Al Rent.
I first met him in 1966 when he came to school as a freshman. And I was junior-senior. I always tell people I was on the extended learning program because I had so much fun in school, they almost literally kicked me out because I had so many credits because I kept taking another class. But that's another story. Dave was brought into WBST, which was, you know, the standalone today's public radio station, but I was the student program director. Dr. William Tomlinson was the head of the department, and he brought Dave in because Dave obviously had come into looking to try to find out about radio. And Dr. Tomlinson brought him up to me because I was, being the student program director, I was really sort of in charge of the station itself. And I scheduled the programming, I scheduled people, did the program logs. I mean, we were very student-driven with some faculty support. But remember, in the early 60s, it was a very small operation. And we had a whole 10 watts of power. So we used to say, with the 10-watt flamethrower of East Central Indiana, we'd make fun of that. And then we figured that the strength of our signal, as you know, Muncie or the Ball State campus, would be McGalliard Road to the north, Jackson Street to the south, New York Avenue to the east, and Tillotson to the west. And beyond that, you were taking a chance if you were going to hear WBST. So Dave came in, and there was this tall, lanky, gangly kind of guy, but he had a nice voice, and Dr. Tomlinson says, we have a very interested student, and I would like you to put him to work. I mean, there was no job interview because we were all students. So I said, that would be fine. Is there something you'd like him to do? And he said, no, you figure it out. And so Dave and I talked for a while, and then I said, okay, we broadcast from 3 p.m. until 10 p.m. because somebody figured that everybody went to bed after 10 and nobody listened to radio. So that was the sum total of our broadcasting schedule, Monday through Friday, no weekends, and nothing during quarter breaks.
Did you just sign off in the...
We just, WBST is now signing off the air. Thank you for joining us. Please join us next week, or tomorrow at 3 p.m. as WBST begins its continuous programming from 3 until 10 of classical music and news. That's all we did, classical music and news. So I said, Dave, could you write some material for us? Absolutely. So he started writing biographies and rewriting the biographies of some of the composers. We took a lot of the information. Google did not exist. Computers did not exist. We had typewriters. And so we would take the back of the jacket of the record, and we played records in those days, 33s, and we would take the back of the jacket, and every once in a while we would have had something from the library that we would get on the composers and or the pieces that were played. And he would write, and he really was a very good writer until he would sneak in these introductory pieces, his own version of a composer's life, family, or fictitious family, or whatever. And if he was reading it, he gave it a special touch. If another student was reading it, the other student was oblivious to what he was saying. Nobody caught on, including me, until Dr. Tomlinson called me down and said, I've been told by some faculty that some of our copy is not correct, and especially Mr. Letterman, who said, and I quote, Claire de Lune, written by Claude Debussy, was written for his wife Claire and all their little loons. And so the faculty had no sense of humor, and so he said, you have to take David off the air. So there are people said that I may have been the first to hire and fire David Letterman in his career. And probably on one level, that's true. On the other level, I just reassigned him. I didn't fire him. I just changed his job description. And not writing the copy for the introduction of the music, but writing news, which, where was my brain at the time? Guess what? He made up the news, too. And so he would write strange stories and slip them in to the stack of stories that the news reader or broadcaster was going to read. And again, that person was oblivious to what was coming. And you know, John, how it goes. You start reading something, and there's a moment of recognition when you realize this is not going well. And there were many times where the reader would realize in the middle of a story that they were reading absolute nonsense, but they were too far into the story, so they had to find a way to back out of it and move on to something that made sense. That's when I first met Dave, and we worked together for that year and part of the next, when I finally graduated, or Ball State finally said, you have way too many credits, you need to graduate and get a real life. And I left school and took my degree and went on. But Dave and I became good friends. He was dating a beautiful young lady, very tall like him. So I felt very short. And in 66, when we met, I was married. I had been married for 1 year to Linda. And Linda is 5'2", and I was 5'10", and Dave is 6'2", or a little bit more, and Michelle was easily 6 feet. So we double dated a time or two and had great fun.
The Ball State of the mid-60s, different than today.
Well, totally. It's a much smaller place. We were only 2 years into being, well, in 66, we were only 1 year into being a university. And that was a major change in the university because you had to rearrange the way everything was done. You had to form colleges, and the ultimate goal was to have a college of sciences and humanities and a college of this, that, and the other, and fit departments into those colleges.
The friend of so many people, the late Al Rent, who met David Letterman in 1966 when they were both students at Ball State University. Al passed away on January 17th at age 73. And in memory of a great friend of the community, we're listening to some of his stories today from times he appeared here on Indiana Weekend.
Indiana Weekend, interesting people and places from across our region. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line. Let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
Thinking today with fondness about our friend Al Rent, who passed away this week. Al was one of Muncie and Ball State's best-known advocates. Among other things, he could be found every year on the WIPB-TV Telesale live fundraising program. A few years ago, we caught up with him as he was waiting to go on.
Tell me about this volunteer spirit that we see around here.
Well, you know, it really goes to, I think, two things. People just enjoy doing this. Part of that is doing something for the community and for the betterment of the station. I mean, there's no doubt that there's the altruistic side of it. But the other side of it, it's just fun, John. It just, people have a good time. And we feed them so well that all of it sort of blends into a three-night happening. And you're doing good for WIPB, you're doing good for the community, and you're having fun at the same time, and that just makes the best of all those worlds blending together.
You've been doing this for how many years?
Well, since it began. So we always have trouble remembering. I think we went on the air for the first time in 1978. So if you do the math, it's about 36 years and counting, and a group of us got together back in that time and said, what are we going to do? We need to raise money. And somebody said, we ought to do an auction, and this thing was born. And it's always been called the telesale. In those days, technology was not the thing that really controlled how we do things today. It was very much people-driven. So the number of volunteers involved in telesale was enormous. It touched every area of the community. And in those days, in the beginning, it was a social event. Everybody not only looked forward to it, but they tuned in to see who was on TV. Those things have changed. I mean, you know, we're in a different time and period. But telesale is still as strong as it's ever been. And it's still an economic driver for bringing in financial support to public television, to WIPB.
So there's some of the spirit. Was there ever a time when you were on the air and you just like forgot where you were or something like that?
Oh, John, many, many times. And it wasn't that I forgot where I was. I introduced wrong items and wrong sponsors or underwriters to where if I hadn't had an earpiece where the director could talk to me, I would have continued to make a huge mistake. But I'd say, I'd introduce something or something else, and then they'd say, wrong sponsor, wrong item. And you'd have to then do a 180 and start over again. But that's the beauty of telesales, live television. So you don't let any of those things bother you. You just laugh at it and go on.
Looking back over the years, thinking back to previous telesales,
yeah,
when you and the other telesale veterans,
yes,
get together, is there any particular nights that you remember? Everybody goes, oh yeah, that's right, that was back in 86, remember?
Well, I do. I don't remember the year, but we did the broadcast for 2 weeks. We either did it, and again, age, your memory sort of slips a little bit. So I'm not sure if we did it 6 total nights, 3 nights each week, or if we did it 4 nights each week. So give or take, we did it a total of 8 or 6 nights. But we did it in a warehouse downtown. Company had lent us their big warehouse. So we had lots of space. We moved all the equipment out there, and we started.
Would have been in the 70s, the 80s?
It was 78. It was 78.
Oh, okay.
It started in the warehouse.
Okay,
yes.
Okay.
It was there for a couple of years, 2 or 3 years. But it was organized chaos from the time we took the air until the time we went off the air. And the things I remember most was that we all just had so much fun. We didn't know. We couldn't do anything. We asked for forgiveness, not permission. And I think that's what made it so much fun to do. And then they would do things like, someone would decide they needed to put a bid. I wore a coat and tie. I mean, I dressed up. Someone needed to bid on my tie. And so in a single evening, my tie raised over $300. And then the guy said, I'll give you an extra $100 if you'll cut it in half on the air. So I spent the other half of the show with just half a tie on, but we made money on it. And then somebody else paid a lot of money to have a pie thrown in my face. Oh, yeah. I have suffered great indignity over the years, John, but I've bared up well, although I did have to retire those clothes. Too much whipped cream.
I've never been in a television studio where there was so much going on.
I know.
You pick up some of that vibe as you're watching it, as
I know,
watching the broadcast.
Totally by design.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
We say, there are people counting down, right?
They're counting down. The board is ending. Everything is in 6-minute increments. And so at the end of 6 minutes, we everybody gets happy. The board closes, but we're going to move right along and sell something else.
The late Al Rent, one of the best-known, best-loved civic figures around Muncie and Ball State. He passed away this week, and we're listening again to some of the stories he told us on this show over the years.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
Remembering Al Rent today, the longtime face of the university as its director of community relations, a beloved civic volunteer, and long before that, a student at Ball State with David Letterman. We talked to Al back in 2015 about their time together. Have you had contact with him since he went off to find fame and fortune?
Yes, several times. There was a period of time where I got Christmas cards every year from The Late Show. And you can only imagine Dave's sense of humor and his firm, Worldwide Pants. Christmas, they were not traditional Christmas cards. They were kind of wacko. He would occasionally send me a note, say something kind or nice. We didn't talk much for the longest period of time until in 2000, Ball State had accumulated the nation's longest losing streak in Division I football. And he would go on the air on Monday with the highlights of the last loss, and on Friday would give a pep talk trying to get the team to win on Saturday. And it never worked out. We lost 22 straight games. But in that process, Dave's people would call and say, would you be willing to send us the video of the game? We can take some of those, quote, highlights or lowlights and put them on the air so Dave can use them. And then once Dave got on the phone with me and said, I really appreciate this, Al. This is going to be fun. And we did. And ultimately the story, you know, goes that Ball State did break the string. We had 22 weeks worth, and that's almost two years worth of free national publicity, worth, in my estimation in those days, over $11 million in free publicity that obviously we could never afford to buy. And then we decided to cap it by taking him the game ball. And we did. I went to New York. They were dumbfounded that we were there. And then the producer said, Mr. Letterman, it was always Mr. Letterman. Mr. Letterman says he knows you and you went to school together. And I said, well, yes, that's true. Well, he would like you to come on the show and present him the game ball. And I thought, I have just died and gone to heaven. There is a God and he's shining down on me. And so I literally carried the game ball on the show. He took my hand, went center stage. We chit-chatted for maybe 30 seconds. And then I went off. And I got home that night, because they tape early in the day, and I'm watching myself at home, and my son calls. And here's finally a father's justification for his very existence with his children. The phone rings and it's my son, Chris, who lives in Indianapolis. And he goes, well, what are you doing there? I just watched you on TV. And I went, well, you know, Jets. I hopped a plane. I flew home. I drove home from Indy. I am here watching it. I had so much fun. Well, that was pretty cool, wasn't it? And Chris says, well, he said he really knows you. And I go, well, yeah, we've talked about that. And he goes, well, it wasn't that I didn't believe you, but... So it's one of those things where all of a sudden you validate your very existence or your very life to your kids. And Dave and I talked a little bit after that. And then when he came back and did building dedication to the Letterman Communication and Media Building in 2007, David and my twin brother Andy, we were all three in what they called radio and television in those days, got together for about a whole 30 seconds. So it wasn't very much. But he came out and he looked at us and he goes, oh my gosh, the Rent Brothers, something about the Rent Brothers ride again. And so he put his arm around us. We took some photos and that was that basically was the last time that I've talked to him.
He's been very loyal to the university.
He is a very quiet benefactor of many things, but especially Ball State. And his message to us was, I don't want any publicity. However, there's the Letterman Scholarship to all C students before and after me. And Dave was not a C student. He was a high B student at worst. Very bright guy, but worked just hard enough when he was in school. Because he was having way too much fun. But he's provided that scholarship, and it is, for all purposes, it's virtually endowed, so it just keeps regenerating itself. And it's given for creativity. So he's been generous on that side. He made it very clear at the way back when that if the administration asked him for money, he was not going to listen to the request. But if students needed help, they should just feel free to get in touch with him. And that's where the generosity has come from. He has seen that working directly with students, as he was here, would be a better fit than working with old stodgy administrators like me who had other ideas of how we could use the money. The students would know that they wanted the money to help them in ways that were very, very student-centered and practical. And so his generosity has really spread quietly throughout the entire telecommunications program. When we dedicated the David Letterman Communication and Media Building, we never asked him for any money. We just put his name on the building and hoped that he would come for the dedication. His mother made him feel incredibly guilty if he wouldn't come. And so he said, in all honesty, to honor my mother, I am here today. But John, when he walked into this building, he and a staff of about 20 CBS people, producers, directors, execs, were blown away by the campus and by the building and the technology in the building, to where he, as he left, he quietly handed then President Gora a check. Nobody knows exactly how much it was for, but it was a nice check. Beyond that, anything he has done has been quiet and unacknowledged publicly.
That's Al Rent, the friend of many and well-known civic volunteer and booster, active for so many years around Muncie and Ball State University, sometimes called Mr. Muncie, a title he would joke about. We wanted to go back to some of Al's stories from Indiana Weekend over the years, as the community remembers a good man and a great friend. And that's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Sean Ashcraft, and the folks in the front office, including your friends Matt Bloom, Connie Clary, Lori Georgie, Emily Kowalski, Andrea Lutz, John Morgan, Angie Rapp, Debbie Webb, Alicia Franklin, and Elena McKenzie. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Sean Ashcraft. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from IPR's listeners. We hope you'll join your friends who are IPR members. You can go to indianapublicradio.org or give us a call at 1-800-646-1812. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.